Daniel Pink talks about motivation as being built on mastery and autonomy and purpose. And I think one of the big things for jazz musicians is that you get a real payoff when you are involved in a really high quality interaction. And I think all people actually really get fired up when they can be part of a really intense interaction where people don't block each other, where people are listening, where every input is relevant to the bigger picture. And I think, you know, that's what's, I think, also interesting with jazz or with the conversation is that the product is not what I produce or you produce, but it's the synthesis of what we produce together.
Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and video show which brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. If you're new to the channel, please subscribe and hit the bell icon. I'm your host, Fritz Bussemaker, and today I'm delighted and privileged to have a conversation with Carl Strømer from Norway. Hey, Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah. Great to be here.
Yeah. Now, Carl's professional career started off, I'd say, quite regular, being a strategy consultant for IBM, but also the co-founder and executive vice president of the leading U.S. Online student travel agency. Later became the director marketing of Norwegian Air Shuttle, and that was one of Europe's biggest low-cost carriers, which he took public. But he also founded The Real Thing, Norway's most popular jazz group. And he worked as a professional jazz musician in New York. And he is the son of the Norwegian artist Sissel Paska, which was shown at the Norwegian National Museum in 2017. And he combined his background in business and love for music, his passion to form Jazz Code. So we're going to talk about jazz today. Hey, Carl, again, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great.
Now, in true jazz fashion, we haven't prepared anything. We're going to go with the flow today. So okay, questions up front. We're just going to see where it's going to take us.
Okay. That's good. I like that.
Yeah. So Jazz Code, it's combining two separate worlds. Were they always separate for you, or were they always combined?
Well, that's a good question, Fritz. I grew up with a mother who was an artist, first pop artist in Norway. A lot of her friends were jazz musicians, and my father was a scientist and came from a very heavy natural sciences background. And I think from as long as I can remember, I've always had to look at art, think about structures, and listen to music. And my grandfather, who was a paleontologist, actually gave me a notebook and a microscope when I was like, you know, 4 or 5 years old. So I guess they were hoping that I was going to be a scientist, but I ended up playing music for most of my youth. And I think the whole idea of Jazz Code came up when I left my career as a touring jazz musician to work for IBM, which was in 1995, when the internet was just on the horizon. And I was very curious about the internet, and I thought this was going to change the world because I had worked in databases earlier. And somebody at IBM asked me a question. They said, so what do you know from jazz that you can use here at IBM? And that was a question that I started to think about, and I started to, because you know, one of the things that you have to do when you're faced with change is to think about, you know, a lot of people think about all the stuff they know that they don't know. But I started to think about all the stuff that I didn't know that I already knew. So I was really trying to mine my own background to find out, you know, how can I repurpose and how can I think laterally about my own skills and how they can be used in a new context. And that sort of led me to think about some of the underlying skills that you acquire and develop as a jazz musician, and how they have a kind of a universal applicants for people in business and people faced with change. Because, you know, if nothing changes, then you can plan everything and you don't have to improvise. Mm-hmm. So then you can develop a plan, you can optimize your resources, and you can really focus on doing things right. Whereas if you're faced with change, if you're faced with turbulence and rapid change, you have to figure out you have to spend more time thinking about information, and it's not so much about doing things right as about doing the right things. So, you know, as we face more change, leadership has to move to the front line, which is what you see in crisis management and what you see in jazz. So, you know, autonomy, listening, being present in the moment, managing attention, timing, and intuitive use of skills, those kind of things. So I kind of spent the last 20 years really trying to develop a theory and a way of thinking around it that can be useful for businesses.
Sorry. This actually realized for me to ask you a question to start off with. Can you give a definition of what jazz is? We've all heard it, but is there a definition? Can you describe it?
Well, I think if you need to think about it as in contrast to a composition. So jazz, of course, there's this definition that has to do with the music, you know, developed in the United States, came from, you know, slaves, emancipated slaves, the Civil War, religious music, African music, all fused together in a form where based on a lot of church music, a lot of elements that sort of fused together into jazz in the beginning of last century. But when I think of jazz, I think of the act of improvisation alone or together with other people. And I think the best metaphor for improvisation is what I'm doing right now. I'm talking without a manuscript, you know, based on your questions and how they trigger associations. And so when you ask me this question, you know, it's actually an amazing process where I'm turning abstract ideas in my own head into audio, into sound, that is then being translated to you. And then you, based on your knowledge of English, you produce sound in return. And we have, through that, a very nuanced and very precise conversation where the ability to choose the right combination of words at the right time, relevant to the context, is really what drives the quality of the interaction. And that's exactly what jazz is. So very often when I talk about jazz, the purpose is to make people aware of this amazing process that we actually participate in when we speak, and how that the principles underlying that process is really has a lot of general use if you can start to mine your own knowledge about language.
So what I'm hearing, this is about very carefully listening and reacting to your people. Well, we're actually playing jazz at the moment, as yes. I understand right now.
Yeah.
It's a lot about improvisation, so building upon somebody else, trusting the other person to go along as well.
Yeah, it is a very robust process that produces a different result every time. And most people associate the word improvisation with something you do when you're ill-prepared. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, people think of the people who are lazy, who never prepared in class, you know, and when they're called upon, they improvise. But improvisation, my definition of improvisation is really a postponing decisions until you are in the moment. And you can think, if you, and do you mind if I use the whiteboard?
Oh, yes, please. Yes. Yeah, by all means.
If you think of a rate of change, so if you have rate of change, something happening, changing very rapidly, or something not changing at all, then you also have a need for coordination. So coordination, and my spelling is horrible, but this is proportional. So if things change really fast, then you also have to coordinate really fast. And this is really, if they don't change at all, then you don't have to coordinate. You can build a plan and you can just execute and optimize the plan. And the optimization of a plan really means that you don't have to have any excess resources. You don't need to have any contingencies because everything is going to go according to plan. But when you have a lot of change, rapid change, then you have to spend more resources observing what's happening. And then you have to adjust your plans to the most recent information. And when you are in a conversation, you are really listening to something that is changing all the time and then coordinating. And that means you can't really decide what you're going to say until you heard what's being said. So the decision in a conversation happens simultaneously with your sound production.
Got it. For me, it sounds like you have to, but you still have to have the end goal in mind. But how you're going to get there, that's based on when you're actually there in the conversation.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you look at these situations where that resembles jazz, mm-hmm. you know, where you have up here, you might have three or four people or two people, and they're interacting. And each person's response is contingent upon what the other people are doing. So they're both listening and contributing at the same time. And this really is a classic description of a simple complex system with few elements, but they're interacting, coherently organized in a way that produces music or a conversation, meaning. And what's interesting with complex systems is that you don't have best practices. You know, there's a guy named David Snowden talks about this Kinevin framework, no best practices. You have to observe and then analyze and then figure out what to do. And sometimes you just have to be in the moment. And one of the things that happens up here is that you need to build flexibility into the system. And flexibility is basically slack. So down here, you really don't want slack because you want to optimize everything. But if you don't have slack up here, you have no flexibility. So, you know, it requires a whole different mindset. And if you think about situations, what I call jazz jobs, which is jobs where you have to act without perfect information. It's all about interacting with other people. Technology plays very little role other than giving you the information. But essentially what happens up here is that, you know, if you have four people talking together, the process can't be sped up because efficiency is not about speed, it's not about cost, it's all about effect and quality. So it's and you see that in a lot of different situations. For instance, you know, I give talks to doctors and I ask them, you know, what's a typical complex situation that hasn't sped up in a couple of hundred years? And they said, well, the patient doctor conversation, because it's about establishing trust so that you can solicit the information you need to prescribe a treatment. It's about an interaction. You know, another example is a jazz band. If you look at Wayne Shorter in 1960 with Miles Davis, or Wayne Shorter in 2015 with Perez and Brian Blade and John Patitucci, you know, the process hasn't really changed. I mean, Wayne Shorter got older, gained a little weight, the microphones got smaller, but the musicians are even placed in the same place on stage so they can hear each other. And the concert still takes about 2 hours, you know. The tempos are still the same. The instruments haven't changed. That's a lot because of standards. But you know, it's not something you can speed up if you want to have a good result. And you see this again and again in situations where you have, you have interactions between a lot of elements. Coronavirus is a good example too.
Yeah, I have to ask, by the way, what are the instruments you play?
I play the drums and I also play guitar.
Okay.
But drums is my main instrument.
Okay. And do these instruments have a very specific role in music?
Yes. And that's actually one of the ways you improve the result, is by having specialized roles and having them, you know, if you try to put three drummers together up here, it doesn't really sound that good. It's not that interesting. But if you have cross-functional teams with the bass and the drums and the saxophone and the piano, then we can take different responsibilities. And that's one way to manage our attention in a way that we get a better understanding of what's going on in the music.
Because if you then translate that to the business environment, what are the business equivalents of the musical instruments which people can use?
So we all master one instrument really well, and we spend the first 15, 20 years of our lives mastering language, right? And as we gradually master the language, our attention can move from the compilation of language to the meaning of language. And I think, so that's one instrument we all play. But, you know, I noticed, for instance, in a lot of my jobs in larger organizations like IBM or even at Norwegian Airlines, is that we tend to pool people with the same resources in the same group. And that works well if you're down here, you know, because if you're down here, you don't have to see the whole picture to make a valuable contribution. You don't have to be autonomous. You don't have to really sense what's going on. You can just be a cog in the wheel. You don't have to know what time it is to work in the watch, you know. But if you're up here, you have to have the whole big picture. You have to have sort of this shared concept of the big picture. And that's when I say cross-functional teams. So that's and what happens down here when you are working, let's say, in a marketing organization, everybody speaks the lingo of marketeering, you know, and it's hard for outsiders to understand what these specialized people are saying. But once you move into a cross-functional team, your language changes. You know, I could talk to drummers about paradiddles and ruffs and snare drums, but other musicians don't care. They want to talk about the music. So they have their specialized lingo for each instrument. But when we work together, we have a specialized lingo for creating music. And it's much easier for us to play together when we have separate instruments, because number one, we are then supporting each other, not competing. Mm-hmm. But of course, if you have instruments with similar functions like percussion and drums, guitarists, different saxophone players, you know, or even a guitar and a piano, they start to compete, which sometimes you want that to happen to sort of raise the temperature in the group, like Miles Davis did when he introduced Cannonball Adderley to the group with John Coltrane in one of his famous quintets in the late 50s. And I've actually written a case about that for Harvard Business School, about the Kind of Blue recording and about what Miles Davis did to make that work. So in small jazz groups, you know, there's some characteristics. First of all, they build a lot on shared references. You know, they have a pool of repertoire that they all know, that they have a, they all have an instinctive relationship to their instrument, like we have to language. And then they have, they have to all hear the same. They all have to sit close together so they can hear the music in order to act in concert. If there are too many people at the same time, then they lose the ability to improvise. So typically in the jazz group, you don't see more than 3, 4, maybe max 5 people improvising at the same time. If you get more than 4 or 5 people, either they all have to refrain from playing that much, maybe even stop playing, so that you have different combinations of trios and quartets, or they have to play different roles.
Yeah, so that's maybe a little bit than having the end goal in mind, because if you have the end goal in mind, you know where you have to go to. And this for me sounds a little bit like you have to at least have a couple of people who will at least play the song you wanted to play.
Sure. And I mean, at some point this metaphor breaks down too, so you know, you can't take everything out of it, but I think that you have to you know, that's how you assemble the team. You have different complementary roles. You have a small team, typically 4 or 5 players, 3, 4, or 5 players. And you build on shared references. One of those shared references is, you know, what music do you like? What music do I like? What do we want to accomplish? You know, what do we want to play? And I think there's one goal that is always, Daniel Pink talks about motivation as being built on mastery and autonomy and purpose. And I think one of the big things for jazz musicians is that you get a real payoff when you are involved in a really high quality interaction. And I think all people actually really get fired up when they can be part of a really intense interaction where people don't block each other, where people are listening, where every input is relevant to the bigger picture. And I think, you know, that's what's, I think, also interesting with jazz or with the conversation, is that the product is not what I produce or you produce, but it's the synthesis of what we produce together. And when I play the drums, you know, when I practice the drums, I'm very focused on the logistics of my drumsticks, you know, that I don't waste energy in how I move the drums, how I move between the drums, you know, and that's efficiency on my instrument. That is, you know, there are best practices in how you play an instrument, but there are no best practices in how you decide what to play in relationship to what's going on in the music. So, you know, there's this synthesis of the parts that everybody decide to play at a certain point based on our shared understanding of what we want to create. And I think it's this tension that you have, because you don't know exactly what's going to happen and you don't control the other players. I mean, I have this slogan, you know, control is for beginners. And I think when you are in a jazz ensemble, the moment you start playing, you're out of control, but you can be in command. You can be in balance. And if you're unsure, you maybe stop playing for a little while, let some others take responsibility. If somebody makes an initiative, you try to build on that initiative. You know, and there are some very distinct principles that we use to make it work. Because once you are surrounded by really good improvisers, you don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you know it's going to be interesting, and you know the music is going to be good enough so you can get paid for it, you know, which is kind of the definition.
Now, if we translate this to the business environment, Are there typical environments where this is very applicable, and are there environments where that's not where you should be using this?
Oh, sure. I think that this is extremely valuable in situations, first of all, where you are few players, because it breaks down when you have large meetings or, you know, I mean, there are principles you can apply, but I think especially in leadership groups, in consulting teams, in sales situations where you need to build, you know, in how you talk to employees, any situation where you have, where value is created through the understanding, you know, complex problem solving, decision making, situations like that, it's extremely valuable.
Now, I just want to come back to the quote. Your quote. You said, "Okay, control is for beginners." I can assume this is quite scary for a business environment if you open up with that statement.
So no, actually, what I found is that people find it liberating. Because you know, everybody can feel that they don't have control. And you can just read the newspaper every day and you read about the most powerful people in the world not having control. You know, Biden doesn't have control when he meets Putin. You know, and there's a lot of situations in politics, in economics, you know, in business, because these are complex systems. Nobody controls the stock market, I hope. You know, nobody controls these complex systems. And as soon as you have complexity, you don't have control, but you have influence. But influence is based on the ability to observe, understand, and time your response. So it's the famous ODA loop, you know, the observe, orient, decide, act, that some of your listeners might be aware of. So you have observe, orient, decide, act, and that's a loop. And that was developed by a fighter pilot named John Boyd, and it's very much quoted in business. Can you see it?
Yeah.
And as you speed up this loop, it becomes one continuous movement. But it's the first observation. If you stifle that because you're too busy or because the signals are too messy or whatever it is, then the whole loop collapses. But you don't have control. But if you can understand what's going on, then you can influence the system.
Hey, thank you for sharing that, Carl. Now, one of the things which I'm now observing is this knowledge comes out quite fluent. So this is very much part of who you are. This is in your repertoire. You know what you're talking about. But how were you able to build that up, that knowledge? How did you start? Was that indeed the childhood you mentioned, or was that the question which the former colleague from IBM triggered you? What?
I think it's just, you know, the famous speech by Steve Jobs at the Stanford commencement speech, where he talks about connecting the dots, you know, and how he learned typography and all the different things that he collected along the way, and how it all turned out to be valuable in the end. And I feel very much the same way, you know, growing up with visual arts. I mean, visual arts is very much like complex systems where all the elements are influencing the totality. When you learn to play an instrument, and I spent 5 years in a music conservatory and learned some great methodology for how you unpack things. And I think I had a great drum teacher in Boston named Alan Dawson that I went to once a week for 4 years. And he taught me a lot about how to learn and how to practice. And I think that's one of the core specialties of jazz musicians, is that they are relentless in practicing, in imitating others, in unpacking how other people are doing things. And I think when I change professions, which I've done, you know, that's one of my specialties now, is changing professions. When you do that, one of the core skills is being able to unpack something and analyze it and break it down and recompile it and recombine it in ways that makes it useful in the moment. And I think, yeah, I'm pretty fluent at this now, but it also, from talking to thousands of business people, from spending a lot of time with my good friend Rob Austin, who was a professor at Harvard Business School and who really took this idea to heart. And I think it actually is a quite revolutionizing idea, and it's not all my idea, you know, but I'm just trying to really figure out what is improvisation and when do we use it. And we really use it when you don't have predictability. Mm-hmm. Because it would make no sense to stick to a plan if the circumstances and the context changed. So a lot of what we do in business, and especially as we connect more and more things and get more and more unpredictability and complexity on more and more levels at the same time, a lot of what we have to do is to actually improvise in a structured way. And when you do that, there's certain principles that work, and there's certain sort of remnants from the sort of the Frederick Taylor way of thinking about management that is actually hurting us.
Oh yeah, we're definitely in a system change. We're moving from this, what I would call a command and control, to a connect and collaborate society. Yeah. So the way we used to organize ourselves in silos has moved to networks, and that requires a completely different way of managing it. And maybe that's where Jazz Code comes into play. Because I do see that what you're talking about and what you're teaching and sharing with everybody, for me, it seems to be all around us. We live in an era where it's becoming more and more relevant.
I think that I suffer from the expert's problem, which is that I spend so much time with this that I sometimes take things for granted, mm-hmm. and think that some of these links are so obvious that I kind of under-communicate them. Somewhat, or don't give enough examples. I find, especially with senior managers, I work with a lot of consulting firms and banks and what have you, and they get it. The moment you mention it, they get it. You know, and, I mean, this is not a new idea. You know, the one of the top managers for Boston Consulting Groups talked about Jazz in the 60s. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. this idea that being able to improvise is a tool to flexibility, and that obviously in a turbulent world, you need to be flexible. An interesting point there is that the more you optimize, the less flexibility you have. So if you're completely, and you could just think of it yourself, if you're completely busy and an opportunity shows up, you might not have time to grab it because you're too busy with stuff that was pre-planned. So, you know, have some white space in your calendar.
Seize the moment, I would say. Yeah. Okay. I was wondering, where do you draw your own inspiration from?
That's a good question. I think somebody once said to me that a good education is like yeast in the bread, you know, it keeps expanding. And I think a lot of the inspiration comes from trying to, you know, I think the biggest quest in my life is to find out what I don't know that I know, because I spent so much time investing in my own knowledge. And I think that most of my life is spent trying to figure out what is it that I don't know that I know. And I actually teach consultants how to think. I have a class in structured thinking that I do for a lot of consulting firms and banks and stuff. And that's a passion for me, is to do that in others, to help them discover stuff that they didn't know that they knew. And I think this, the whole Jazz Code, relating it to language, when people start to think about their own language as a tool for improvisation and a tool for how they can furnish themselves around unpredictability as a tool for solving problems on a larger scale, then, you know, they can actually acquire results really fast. And when I teach people, when I run training classes, people sometimes say, you know, this exercise was really easy. Could you give us a harder exercise? And I said, no, the way to learn is to build your own exercises. And what I want to do is to make you discover something that you didn't know that you already had. And once you discover that, then you can look at it and reconfigure it and play with it. And I think that was the most important thing I learned from my drum teacher in Boston, was that to really learn something and to really dig into something, you have to make your own exercises.
I like that. So from that, in that context, what does success mean for you?
Well, I found that there are three things that I constantly come back to that for me makes me happy. Well, I think ultimately happiness is about maximizing your own potential, and then not only through yourself, but through other people. So I think that is my life quest. But I find that when I can interact with people, when I can build mastery, and when I can receive feedback, either positive or feedback that can teach me to do things to improve mastery, I think the interplay between interaction, mastery, and feedback is part of what helps me realize potential in myself and in others.
I like that answer very much. I got one final question for you, Carl. Any advice to young manager or the next generation as a whole to help them start out with their journey? Are they now inclined to follow the Jazz Code? What would your advice be?
My advice would be to allow yourself to play around without always knowing where it's taking you. Because I think people, you know, I teach a lot of classes to young consultants, for instance, and I notice that they very often are so focused on doing things that they don't have time to understand what they're supposed to do. So when I give them an exercise, you know, they start doing the exercise before I've told them why they're doing it and what they're supposed to do. And there is a difference between, you know, running fast and knowing which direction to take. And if you don't know your direction, you could run at the speed of light in circles and you would have absolutely no velocity. You know, you're not moving at all. So I think playing around, realizing that to develop skills that enables you to learn fast. I mean, that's what good education is about, because the only thing you know about education is that by the time you get out of college, the stuff they teach you is kind of obsolete. So, but learning how to learn.
Learning how to learn. Isn't that to some extent what jazz is about?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's okay. About reconfiguring elements in, you know, so known elements in novel ways by playing around.
Hey, Carl, I want to thank you so much. You've taken us on a great journey on what jazz is about, how jazz can be used in the business environment. You have given a different perspective, for me at least, on improvisation, which I appreciate very, very much. And again, I want to thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure talking to you and for you to share your insights with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me, Fritz. It's a real pleasure to talk about my passions. Thank you.
Hey, this was The Brand Called You. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.